You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Eusebius is on Twitter at Eusebius.
My goodness, I'm having way too much fun. Can't believe I'm getting paid little, but nevertheless paid to have so much fun. Jacques Rousseau, who is one of your favorites on our show, he is with us in our Cape Talk studio. How's it, Jacques?
Morning, Eusebius.
Are you well?
I'm very well, thank you.
Did you get it all this morning?
I got about half of it.
We're going to be talking philosophy. And I was saying this morning to my colleague Stephen Kreuters on 702 Breakfast that it is a little bit, in a way, I was just being playful about it. We're affirming Juju. Juju's got a degree in philosophy, an honors degree. Jacques has studied philosophy. Teachers, I've studied philosophy. We love people who love philosophy as well. We are very pleased that Juju has a degree in philosophy, an honors degree, noho. So can we give Juju another round of applause just because? So because Jacques and I, not that we need an excuse, because, you know, we have the power and platforms to speak public philosophy. But we've got a wonderful excuse to use Julius as Exhibit A to talk about philosophy. But there is a serious part to this conversation as well. So I hope you're not going to switch off or find it too complicated. We'll try and keep it simple. But basically, Jacques said something on my Facebook wall yesterday that goes to the heart of a conversation that we need to have as a country, really, in many ways, even though it was a quick comment that he had made, and I reiterated it myself in a longer version of my own Facebook status update. When it comes to our beliefs, and if you're listening to this conversation, I know you all recognize this as true of you. It is true about me as Eusebius, as Jacques. It is true about the people who write about this phenomenon. Sometimes we have beliefs that are so stubborn that even when we get evidence to the contrary of what our belief says, we just refuse to change, or the belief resists changing. And I wonder why it is that we have beliefs that behave in that manner. So I want you to listen and to engage with Jacques and myself and with yourself. Pick up the phone and call us. Be honest. Give us an example of a belief that is so dear to you, so important to you, that you are or have struggled, even when presented with evidence to the contrary, to change your belief. And we are all susceptible to that kind of, I think, intellectual weakness. Sometimes it's a moral weakness. But can you think of a belief in your life that is so strong that you know and you've experienced someone trying to give you evidence to the contrary, cough, tub, and becky, cough, and it just hasn't gone away? 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg, in Cape Town, on 021-446-0567. Okay, Jacques, over to you. I need to rest my vocal cords. Share your brilliance with us, because I think what you were saying quite playfully, I first misunderstood you, but instantly reinterpreted your comment that in a weird way, Juju, now a philosophy graduate, is an example of this.
Yeah, well, our response to him, I think, is an example. Some people's response to him is an example of this. So what people might not realize is that we've got a participation rate in higher education in this country of around 20% of the population, right? So it's a very small selection of people who are talented enough and work hard enough to achieve this sort of thing. But you see some chatter on social media which still refers to, for example, Julius Malema getting his G for woodwork or whatever. So there's this fixed impression from some, and of course, racism is one route we can go down, but let's leave that out for now, just to wall off the issues. Some people still, in a sense, programmed or primed to think of him as some sort of, you know, less intellectually competent agent than they are. And these people who are saying this might themselves not be able to graduate with an honors degree in philosophy. Yes. So the evidence here is that he has worked hard and that he is smart. And whether you like him or don't like him or like his politics or not has got no bearing on the fact that you should change your mind about him being a smart guy.
Do we know, and is this one of those cases where, and I think this is why your work is so important, Jacques, interdisciplinary studies matter, right? Because although this is an interesting philosophical question, I mustn't obsess about the philosophical element. I would imagine that psychologists in particular probably have more useful thing to tell us about why we are so stubborn to change our minds, even when we have evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, so the thing, so it's called belief perseverance is the kind of thing, is the rough pattern we're talking about here, the maintaining of a belief despite new evidence that firmly contradicts it. So everybody who's listening will be able to find an example, as you were saying in your intro. One thing that I think a lot of people would relate to is relationships that are failing, and you kind of keep trying to patch them
up. That's true.
Even though friends might be saying, look, this isn't working, cut your losses, etc. But you just cling on because you really have invested so much in it. And that, to me, is the psychological explanation, is that investment in a narrative. You construct your self-identity via certain core beliefs, and you are reluctant to change them because they would unsettle that sense of self. Think about conspiracy theorists.
Yes.
Think about religious people. People, I see people praying that they've been saved from the hurricane, etc.
Yeah.
And it never crosses their mind to think, well, what about all the people who've died? Perhaps they were praying too, you know. So that's something you need to somehow
reconcile. But it makes the point, yeah.
Abused spouses. I mean, so my relationship thing extrapolated to a horrible example where people stick with something even though it's even hurting them. So we can all see examples. You think you're a good driver even though you have more accidents than all your friends, you know. So yeah, belief perseverance is the one thing. And the second thing is framing, where we encounter something in a certain context. So you encounter a malema as this firebrand. You don't like his disruptive energy that he's bringing to politics. You see this detail about him that he got his G for woodwork, and you immediately use that as a way to frame him as a disreputable or inconsequential person, and then you never let go of that.
So the key explanation is that we tend to get benefits, whether they be material, psychological, whatever they might be, and we don't, and if we were to accept evidence that we are wrong about a particular belief, you've always believed all white people are racist, and now you are confronted with this good-natured Ben Williams and Jacques Rousseau. And it's horrible, because if you give that up, then you have to give up a whole range of daily behavior that has become part of your public performance of hating all white people.
Yeah, precisely. So that speaks to what you would know as confirmation bias, right? So you choose those details that affirm the narrative. And as I was saying, it's that self-defining narrative that we're preserving. I think he's a psychologist, I've forgotten his name, has described the process of abandoning core beliefs as something like working out a process of grief when you're trying to get rid of some deep trauma. Mm. It goes through stages and it takes a long time because we like to defend this predictability, this rhythm of life, which involves these core beliefs. Mm. So it's not like we can just switch these things off and on.
Yeah.
We need to kind of process them.
Okay, 14 minutes before noon. This is absolutely fascinating. You've listened to Jacques describe these beliefs that we have as human beings. It's a feature of our life as psychological animals, including our philosophers and psychologists themselves. If you do a little bit of thinking, and the lines are now open, can you think of a belief that you have, whether it be about your spouse, about your driving, about a political figure, about a writer, about that irritating talk show host on Cape Talk, and you just, it doesn't matter how much counter evidence you have, it's very hard for you to let go of a cherished belief that you've always had. Have you got one of those? 011-883-0702. Give us a call. Let's talk about the phenomenon. And in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. And I think this is interesting, not just intellectually. I think this actually is a very important social and political issue in our country. We have hardened beliefs, echo chambers, and I think in many ways technology makes this phenomenon that Jacques has described even worse. Because if you find the confirmation bias, if you find like-minded people who think like you, then you reinforce the truth about that particular belief. Do you have a belief like that about yourself, about a skill set that you think that you have, even though your friends keep telling you that you don't, about another human being, maybe about your ex that you hate? Give us a call and let's talk about it.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
We're in conversation with Jacques Rousseau. We're talking about beliefs that all of us have that are stubborn, that tend not to change or do so with enormous difficulty, if at all. Stubborn beliefs where even when you are presented with evidence that your belief is wrong, you just can't change it. Some people have that kind of relationship with Julius. Still think of him as an uneducated buffoon type of thing, even though the guy's now got 2 degrees. And there are many, 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 many examples. So we're talking about that particular phenomenon. There's a couple of issues I want us to talk about just in the brief time that's left, Jacques, but let's engage our listeners. Here's an interesting tweet. Nga Nga says, Eusebius, for me, Christianity is an example and the ability to unlove the people I love, even when they have proved to be the worst people. I'm not sure whether that quite fits the phenomenon, but maybe it's a good example of the psychological hold that core beliefs have over us. I assume what that listener means, Jacques, is that Christianity has such a hold on their behavior in terms of the key beliefs that are part of being a Christian that they find themselves having difficulty perhaps following convictions they have, that it's time to stop loving Jacques Rousseau.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, but my reading of the tweet, I agree, it's a bit ambiguous. I think he was talking about two separate things. And the second part with the relationships, it is an interesting one, because one could say that we codify this belief perseverance thing into our social norms. So think about families and relationships. I mean, many of us would have had experiences of fathers or mothers or brothers or sisters that we simply don't like, that are offensive or abusive in some way, that you would never dream of being a friend to if you met them in your day-to-day life. But there's this norm that is inescapable, that you have to engage with them and treat them with respect, etc. So that's, I'm just thinking about this now, but that is a particular or peculiar kind of codification, a social enforcement of belief perseverance.
Yeah.
Which I think might have been what he was saying, but he's dead right, or he or she or whomever this was, that Christianity and all religions would be like this, which is why I'm always fascinated to talk to many of my Jewish friends who don't actually believe any of these things anymore. They kind of live a certain life, a certain codified social ritualized life, but it doesn't involve any weird metaphysics anymore.
Sure.
If you ask them, do you believe in X? They say, no, I don't care about that.
I love this tweet from Israel. Eusebius, an example of a belief that doesn't seem to change despite evidence that it is a false belief, is the belief that we have as South Africans that we are still very good at soccer. I totally agree with that one. I wanted to ask you this question. Is it an intellectual and even a moral failure if you have a belief that you cling onto even when you have evidence that your belief is false or not justified?
I would say it is, because rationality, I think, is to be chased and pursued and preserved and cherished and so forth, and conceptual flexibility and the ability to change one's mind is a key element of rationality, right? So if we have false beliefs or imperfect beliefs or whatever it might be, our subsequent actions and relationships and so forth are going to be influenced by that. So if you care about living your best life and helping other people live theirs, we need to be able to change our minds, yes.
What do you say to our colleagues who are in departments we usually scoff at as kids, but hopefully we grow up as adults and respect the other departments in our 30s and 40s, from literature, for example, who will use words like, well, we live messy lives, you guys. Stop being such purists about truth and rationality.
Well, I'd say there's two. You are being mischievous, I know, but those are two separate issues, to the extent that we certainly should drop the kind of arrogant flame, intellectual flame war sort of thing, and have some intellectual humility ourselves, as you and I have spoken about many times. But that you don't need to go down the relativist rabbit hole where you're not allowed to actually say, well, actually that's wrong and you should stop believing in your postmodern nonsense.
Yeah, no, fair enough, yeah. Hello, Betty. Okay, we've lost Betty there. Let's go to Centurion. Tamsanga, welcome to the conversation.
Yes. What about the white people that have been indoctrinated that black people will never be pilots, black people will never be engineers, and you still get those black people, the whites, that look at black people down, despite that there is proof that black people can go to the very same universities, obtain the very same degrees, obtain the very same qualifications as their counterpart whites. What about them? Where
yeah. Or our good friend Charlie on the open line yesterday, who said that black soccer players can't think logically. I suppose it raises a general question. We're running out of time. We're going to squeeze in another call, but I'm going to give you a minute to answer Tamsanga and maybe ask a a forward-looking question, Jacques. What can we do to be better at having our beliefs respond rationally to evidence?
I think that we should occasionally try to do a kind of belief audit. And when we encounter a belief that we hold really strongly, you know, the sorts of things you find yourself fighting with people about at the dinner table or at the bar counter, try to remind yourself to do a diagnostic on it and think to yourself, what evidence would persuade me or persuade me that I have a flaw here or can be corrected on this? And if you can't think of anything, I think that's a huge red flag that it's not a thought through or well-considered belief. And as the caller was saying, this is exactly an example. And I think that people are sometimes irredeemable. And I think that we're not going to fix people who believe. I mean, I grew up being told that black people can't see in three dimensions. I mean, you know, so that's the kind of thing. And of course, you're lucky enough to live a life where you can escape that sort of nonsense.
Yeah, well, I'm not a good counter example. I was particularly bad at university at three-dimensional geometry.
Okay. So I think the best we can hope for is to try to bring up new generations of kids. And I mean, this is in science, people have said that we don't actually have scientific revolutions. What happens is that the opponents of progress just die out, basically. Yes. And new people come through the ranks who don't believe in the nonsense.
Okay,
I think that racism is like that.
That's true. Yeah. We can't take more calls because we've only got 1 minute left. Because clearly, to me, there's so many beautiful extra themes we need to get into here, Jacques. I would imagine it would also be easier for the individual to be okay with changing their mind if we were not so quick to gang up against people who have changed their minds. So you say to Eusebius, but Eusebius, you used to hate communism 10 years ago. Now you want to fight for a communist South Africa. So it seems as if in society we sometimes collectively make it seem as if there is an intellectual vicious, it's intellectually not praiseworthy to change your mind. That doesn't help, does it? 30 seconds.
That doesn't help at all. This kind of ganging up binary nature, especially on social media, doesn't help at all, where somebody sins once and they're forever that kind of sinner. Like, think about the Ramaphosa and regardless of the political backstabbing and machinery, something like that. Or if you're a plagiarist once 20 years ago, we'll never trust you to write authentically again.
Or even more, what I mean more specifically, Jacques, is changing your mind is seen as an intellectual weakness.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we are encouraged to be certain about everything, to be dogmatic about everything. Mm. And it's considered vacillation or lack of commitment if you change your mind. And that we need to get rid of.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on. I think we're going to unravel some of these in a longer conversation, but this was a wonderful start. Thanks, Jacques.
Thank you. Cheers.